Welcome back to the Move Podcast. We're going to take a look at the first nine stages of the 2023 Giro d'Italia. Now, we already jumped in midweek and gave you, you know, a lot from stages one through six. Now we're going to go deeper into everything that's happened since then, since we got together on Thursday, including a big abandon that none of us saw coming. That's a big deal. How does that change things? Why did it happen? And how are things going to shake out with those who remain? It really changes this entire Giro d'Italia. Before we get into that and have Johan Bernal and Spencer Martin join us, before we do that, let's check in with Lance with some offers from a couple of our partners.
Today's show also brought to you by Ventum. This is our bike, our go-to bike of choice for not just myself, but George as well. We just got our new NS1s. We were just over in Europe and have been just riding constantly on the new NS1. Thing's a damn rocket ship. Of course, their gravel bike, the GS1, is also a gravel rocket ship. It's been amazing. There's so many bikes and so many options out there. I got to say, this one has really gotten my attention. And I finally converted the Diva, George, over to the Ventum. The brand is totally kicking ass. Dedicated customer support to help you out at every step of the purchasing process. They're also producing great content. They'll make you inspired to ride your bike. We all need that. Check out their socials on Instagram and YouTube. It's at Ventum Racing. Special offer. Get 10% off when you use the code WEDO at checkout over at VentumRacing.com/TheMove. Again, that's VentumRacing.com/TheMove. Checkout code is WEDO. Gets you 10% off. And talk about being a fan of something. Let's talk about Manscaped. Let's go ahead and tell the world, right, that the leaders in below-the-waist grooming are traveling north of your South Pole with their revolutionary grooming products. The brand new Weed Whacker 2.0 and their new beard line confirms they have all the best tools for your hygiene toolbox. Time for you to upgrade your game by going to manscaped.com. Using the code THEMOVE gets you 20% off. But gentlemen, while you're there, check out the Beard Hedger Pro Kit. This is one that we, you know, I can barely grow a beard, so you know George is all about this. A couple of other cool factoids: waterproof, cordless trimmer, rotary wheel, 20 hair cutting links, all with one guard. An amazing thing. Also, and big thanks to everybody at Manscaped for really pitching in for the fight against cancer, specifically the fight against testicular cancer. Good on you. Again, head on over to manscaped.com. Use the code THEMOVE. That gets you 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped.com.
All right. I am so glad that we have Johan Bernal and Spencer Martin in here to make some sense of this Giro d'Italia. I feel like we should start with the abandoned news. You know, Remco Evenepoel had this seemingly in the bag, especially after watching that first opening time trial. And then it's like, is he slipping? The dialogue was like, is he slipping? Did he on form too early? Is Roglic coming into form? And then we see Ineos becoming a real factor in this Giro d'Italia. So first, let's start with talking about Remco abandoning with COVID, which I'm trying to remember exactly our conversation on the preview show, but we didn't think COVID was going to be a factor at all in this Giro d'Italia.
Well, you know, yes and no, JB, because let's not forget, you know, Jumbo-Visma had to reshake their whole team, basically. I think from the initial eight names, only three of them were at the start because they had COVID cases before the Giro. They had three guys from Romandia and another guy got COVID. And then, yeah, Trapnik crashed out while he was already in Italy. So obviously we knew that COVID was in the peloton. Especially coming from Romandia. But yeah, I mean, nobody saw this coming, of course. I've seen that Soudal Quickstep was really, really, really very careful. All the guys are wearing masks. But you know what? Once you get into the race, things start to relax a little bit. And I was really surprised to see that news yesterday. It was actually while I was recording La Movida. So we were, Victor Hugo, Peña and I, we were talking about, you know, that Remco had won the time trial, but not with a huge difference. You know, what did that mean? And then finally during the podcast, we got the news that he had COVID. obviously, I think that changes everything. We don't know if, of course, we all saw how strong he was in the first stage in the time trial. There, he took 43 seconds on what we thought would be his biggest rival. Because let's be honest, you know, we were not thinking or talking about Geraint Thomas and Theo Gegenhardt then. And then he had that two crashes, I think, on stage 5 or 6. And then we were waiting, okay, you know, how is he going to recover from this? And we saw that, not yesterday, the day before, he could not respond to an attack of Roglic. So my thinking was, okay, you know, he is definitely still hurting a little bit from the crash. It was steep, very steep. So it might, you know, hinder him a little bit. And then yesterday, the time trial was a surprise. Even if he won it, he won the time trial with 9/100ths of a second. But for me, more telling was the way his time trial went, because he started off and he said after the time trial, he had a really good pacing schedule. He knew how many watts he had to put out in this part of the time trial in this part. And he said that the first 13 kilometers, he was on schedule. He did what he was supposed to do. And then he saw that he could not maintain it. Let's not forget, he was 20 seconds ahead of everybody on the first time split. And then he started to kind of fade away. Anyway, he still won the time trial by 9/100ths of a second, which is really, I mean, as like we said in the pre-show, Spencer, I've never seen a time trial with such a small difference. But yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's a big blow for the Giro, of course, for cycling. And even the guys who were there, in the names of Roglic and Geraint Thomas and Theo Gegenhardt and others who may have an option to win or be on the podium, I'm pretty sure that they would prefer that the favorite of before the race is there and then beat him rather than, you know, winning and having the knowledge that, yeah, okay, I won, but, you know. But anyway, it happens all the time in big stage races. You know, people crash out and there's always a winner. And at the end of the day, you know, that guy that wins the 3-week stage race stays in the record books.
Yeah, you never remember the rider who didn't win. It sounds stupid, but no one, like, I don't know, like the 91 NBA Finals, no one's like, well, Magic Johnson got hurt, and so Michael Jordan's title doesn't count. Like, you slowly forget that over time, and you have Geraint Thomas wins this, he'll probably not be beating himself up that Remco Evenepoel had a leap with COVID.
No, these are all factors in winning. Is it staying healthy, staying out of crashes? It's all those little bits and pieces that have to come together.
Yeah,
as part of racing.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I have to say though, you know, with the COVID present again, and you know, and Evenepoel is not the first guy. I think there's like 3 or 4 guys. One of them was Philippe Ogana. Another guy is Rigoberto Urán. I think there's 2 or 3 others who went home. It's you know, we're going to wake up every day and see who is starting the stage. Because now that it's going around, you know, I mean, I know for a fact, for example, that Sudal Quickstep and Ineos and Jumbo Visma are teams that are really, really very, very careful. They think about everything. I mean, it would be, you know, stupid to spend so much money on all these little details and then, you know, be completely relaxed about COVID, right? So that's a bit my fear, that, you know, this is going around and that this is not the last guy that the race is going to lose because of COVID.
It's also very hard to even know what effects COVID is having on these riders right now, because, you know, it's a delicate subject, I know, but those, you know, in 2020, when people were getting sick, they were getting very sick, and you wouldn't have felt like riding a bike. You know, these guys, some of them may not even know they had it if it were not for the test. We have probably had it a few more times than we even know, right? So it's difficult to even, gauge how much it would pull them out, like affect their performance.
I do wonder, like, let's say he never takes the test. He never tests positive because he doesn't take it. He's just sick. Like, this is a punishing Giro. I mean, these stages are cold. They're wet. They're all over 200K. The pace has been hard. I mean, if this was a tour and you could roll along for four or five sprint stages, maybe, but I just have a hard time believing with it, with a viral infection of any significance, that you could realistically hang in the race. And as Johan was saying in the pre-show, his face yesterday after the stage was beat up. I mean, you could see how much he was suffering just from his face. So I don't know if he could have, I at first thought, well, this is a little odd. Like, maybe just isolate him for the rest day, see how he feels Tuesday morning. Maybe he can get through that stage. But, you know, with a little bit more time to think about it, you know, they probably just thought, you have COVID. Like, what are we doing? You're already sick. You're not going to win this race if you have a viral infection against, you know, he only had a 45 second lead, which is not as much as you would have expected after two flat time trials. I don't think it was like really an option they had to keep him in the race.
It was a 30-second lead after the time that he lost. After the time he lost, then it was again back to true. It was again back to 45. But Spencer, you know, after the time trial, so before he took the test, so he didn't know yet that he had COVID. He was already complaining about, you know, my nose is blocked. You know, I'm not feeling great. I hope I can recover, you know, with the rest day. So he was complaining about certain symptoms. And you know, my personal opinion is that right now, I mean, in the majority of the cases of COVID, of course, there are still cases where the symptoms are severe. But, you know, I mean, almost everybody is vaccinated. In the case they're not, they have built up enough antibodies. And let's say the symptoms are milder, but it's still comparable to a flu. And you know what? I mean, if it's not COVID and you have the flu, you go home too in the gym.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's that there's nothing that can go wrong. You know, I mean, okay, you can have a cold, okay, and you can try to get, you know, to get through a few stages, and you can get better from a cold, but not from the flu. I mean, the flu, it's complicated. And I'm sure, you know, there's I've seen a lot of comments on social media that, yeah, you know, this is, he saw that he was fading and that he wasn't going to win, so they took that as an excuse. I call bullshit on that. I think it's, you know, listen, at the end of the day, they have their medical team. They did the tests. He tests positive. He must not feel great. So that's it. You know, I mean, I have a hard time believing that a team like Sudal Quickstep, having put all these efforts since November, in this preparation of the Giro, which was his main objective of the year, with, you know, all the riders around who had the same program. They went to Alto. You know, Evenepoel, I think before Liège-Bastogne-Liège, he had spent 5 days at home since the season started. Wow. You know, you don't throw that away like, you know, like that. There must be a serious reason. And I think those suspicions, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, conspiracy theories that he just went home because he saw that he couldn't win, that's not true. Absolutely not true.
Well, I think it's good that Johan's pouring cold water in this. I'm not proud of this thought. My first thought was, oh, he got an appearance fee from the Giro, from RCS, and he was just going to do the tour. That was always the plan. And he just dropped out. And now he's going to collect a few million euros and then go to the tour anyway.
But I think that was my twisted thought too. Not that he got paid already, but I thought, oh man, he's on form. He realizes he's tour ready. Let's go home, prepare for that.
No.
This is late at night, yo.
We're spending too much time on social media and reading too many, you know, whatever you call it, you know, investigation, you know, CSI.
We're like those guys that get on the WebMD Oh, science. Yeah. I think we're a doctor, right?
There's a direct correlation between time on Twitter and how dumb you become.
All right, let's stay focused on Remco for the time being. I think at a certain point, we're going to talk about those who remain. And it's really going to be interesting with Garen Thomas and Theo Gegenhardt and Roglic. So let's hold off on that for a moment. What do you suspect? And I know there's no way to know for sure. What do you think the rest of the season looks like for Remco? How do they shape this up? I'm assuming I'll have a speedy recovery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. I don't know. I don't know. Personally, the way everything is structured now and the way the seasons are set up, I think, I mean, I may be completely wrong. I have no idea. Yeah. I think his next focus was going to be the World Championships, and he's going to remain with that plan because the tour, listen, right now, especially in the case of a guy like Remco Evenepoel, he's world champion. He's one of the biggest talents. Whenever he shows up, it's people expect him to win. First, the first person who expects him to win is himself. He expects to win. So
yeah, if you look online at what they had disclosed, I mean, yeah, it's world championships for Rodin time trial in Lombardia and one other tune-up race before those, but
yeah. And Liège, it was Liège-Bastogne-Liège, the Giro, and then the worlds and, the world's road race and time trial. And so, knowing what goes into this, this is not just preparing for a race. It's a whole project. It's not just one person. It's a whole team, right? So I think it's possible, but I think it would really have to come from Evenepoel himself, who says, you know what? I absolutely now want to, I'm so pissed off that this happened. I want to put things straight and, you know, go to the tour. I can't see it happening. I think Evenepoel is a guy, he's very methodical. And whenever he wants to go for an objective, he will want to prepare perfectly for it. And it's not just that you could say, oh, he only did 9 days of racing in the Giro. But, you know, all the work he did before is, of course, there's a lot of that condition that still will remain. You know, even if it goes down a little bit now because of his illness, he would be able to start some kind of a preparation towards the tour. But I just don't think that that's going to happen. It's the whole mentality shift. You need to turn the whole team around again. And Evenepoel is not a guy who can say, okay, you know, I'm going to go to the tour, just throw me in there, take one guy out of the tour, because let's not forget the guys of Sudal Quickstep that are foreseen for the tour. They're also preparing right now, right? With other objectives, because I don't know, they're probably going to take a sprinter, probably Jakobsen. And Alaphilippe, right? Yeah, it's true. Alaphilippe is not Lefebvre's best friend anymore, or at least, you know, they're not in love anymore with each other. I don't see it happening. I think he's going to stay on schedule for his next objectives.
And repeating a world championship would just be massive. I would shut everyone up.
If there's anything else to change, I think it would make a lot more sense for him to do the Vuelta again, because not that he has time to prepare for that. And after the Vuelta, he can definitely go straight to the world.
But just one, if it's a really weird year where the world championships is now right after the tour, and I think it's, you know, it's like 2 weeks before the start of the Vuelta. Make it a little hard.
Yeah. Again, yeah. Okay. Well, then, yeah, I think we have the answer there. I think he's preparing full gas for the World Championships.
Is that, I still have a hard time believing Sudal Quickstep is just going to be like, yeah, we're sending this cute little team to the tour. Oh, no, we didn't get a stage win. And you just have Remco Evenepoel sitting at home. It seems a little ridiculous, but let's say he does win the world championships. We are really off topic now, but let's say he wins the world championships. And is that kind of an odd season? Like, he wins Liège, looks great, does 9 days of a grand tour, wins the worlds, and that's the season?
Hey, I would have taken that any time.
That's coming.
Just winning Liège and not having any more results in the rest of the year, I'll take it.
Yeah,
but 90% of the peloton will take it. Listen, Spencer, let's not forget also one thing, right? So One thing is the team and the sponsors, but let's not forget that Patrick Lefebvre has all of his sponsors signed up for until 2026. So, you know, it's they're fine. They're fine. I mean, they're not going to be judged on. I mean, this is obviously, you know, a big setback, but that's part of the sport, right? I mean, listen, it's, nothing's guaranteed. I mean, but he's out with COVID now. What if he crashes? And you know, he crashes out. That's the same thing. So, no, I don't think there's going to be any pressure of the sponsors for him to do the tour. The pressure is from the media and the fans.
I mean, yes, I agree. Everyone would love that. He is really at a level, though, where he's should be being compared to Pogacar and Vingegaard. And if I don't know, it feels odd to me. Obviously, I'm not a stakeholder, but Lefebvre, what's his favorite thing to say? He'll say this to anyone. He's saying it to a mailman right now. I don't pay these guys to win world championships. I don't care about world championships. They don't ride for my team in the world championships. Is that going to play into that at all?
Hey, is there any jersey that has more exposure than the World Championships jersey throughout the year with your sponsors on it?
Especially when you show up in white.
You know, no. Lefebvre knows the value of a World Championships jersey for sure. I think he had like 8 or 9 already in the history of his team. So he knows.
They're a plague on his team. He can't stand them. It hides the sponsors.
Again, let's hold off on getting into what we think is going to shake out for the rest of the Giro, especially with Roglic, Geraint Thomas, Gegenhardt. We'll get into that. But let's touch on some of the stages that we have not talked about since our last visit. Stage 7 with a breakaway that stayed. Let's give us some of your thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm. You want to go first, Spencer?
Yeah, I need to issue a formal apology to everyone listening to this. I said the last episode, yeah, this is going to be a good stage. Make sure you watch this one. It might have been the most boring stage I've ever seen in my life. It was interesting scenery, but that breakaway went, and once it was gone, it was gone. They didn't really try to pull it back. Pretty cool, like, trio, because neither of them had ever had a professional win before. So that was interesting, and then that was kind of it. The GC group didn't do anything. It was
the whole GC group just called a truce, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we all knew that was a possibility because it was announced that the last 13 kilometers, it was the first mountaintop finish above 2,000 meters, and not extremely hard, though. It was super long, and then the last 8 kilometers were a little steeper, but an incredible strong headwind. So, you know, it's already the first time in any Grand Tour that you have the mountain stage, no matter how these guys are prepared, no matter how much they know their numbers and how much watts they can put out. And they're all nervous to see how they're going to respond, the GC guys, in the first mountain stage. That's still, you know, the doubt they have. So, you know, nobody really wanted to give it a try. The stage was not for grabs, you know, the breakaway was gone. And so I can understand that that was with that wind, it would be really stupid to try something, a huge risk for maybe nothing, or at least just a little bit, because if it's windy on a climb and it's not extremely steep, then you're always at disadvantage when you're in front. So What I do find interesting, though, it's a pure coincidence, but so this was already the second stage that the breakaway made it to the finish, right? The other one was the stage with Leknesund and Barre Peintre. That was stage 4, I think. And was the second time this season in any World Tour race that a breakaway made it to the finish also. So 2 times in the Giro. And the second time in this Giro that a guy wins who has a brother in the same race. Mm. You know, Barre Peintre has his brother.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's two brothers. There's two Barre Peintres. I think it's, I don't know. One is Aurélien and the other one, Valentin and Aurélien, and here the two Baez brothers are also on the same team and in the same race, and and one of the brothers wins again. So those room brother rooms, the atmosphere must have been amazing there. This guy is the youngest of the two brothers, but first victory in the professionals. What I mean, as an Italian, winning a stage in the Giro, and also amazing accomplishment for Eolo Cometa. You know, the team of Ivan Basso and Alberto Contador. They are a team that's invited to the Giro, and for the second time in 3 years, they win a big mountain stage. That's, I mean, for a small team like them, that's an amazing accomplishment, and for sure, super, super happy sponsors.
And I mean, his brother actually was in the breakaway the next day, which is, how often does that happen? Two brothers in breakaways on consecutive days. But I rewatched that final climb and he played it so smart. Like he did the least work possible. The other two riders were attacking. He would just sit on the wheel of the rider who had to close it down and force them to close it down. They get inside. And as you said, headwind. So just wait. Just sit there and wait. He waited until 200 to go. He did one move pretty much all day, and that was the winning move. And it was an impressive ride from him.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guy who got second, I would like to talk a little bit about him. So I forgot his first name now. Is it?
It's Carl.
Carl. Carl Vacek. So young rider on Team Koratek, also a team that's invited. Finished second, but was incredibly happy, was kind of celebrating his second place. And then when I heard the interview after the finish and looked up a little bit his story, it was interesting to find out that, you know, he's the same age as Remco Evenepoel and they were rivals in juniors. There was one stage race where Karol Vacek beat Remco Evenepoel twice. He won a time trial and he won a mountain stage. And apparently, he must have been 18 then, in juniors, he made some comments, as you do when you're 18 and you feel on top of the world. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, now we've seen who is the best climber of this generation, which, you know, racing against Evenepoel, that's not very smart comment to say, because I think he had those two wins, but he didn't do much else. But apparently, you know, that kind of turned the hit against him a bit, and he had a rough road towards, you know, the professionals, and then basically, you know, nobody believed in him anymore. And I heard his interview after the stage, and he said, you know, this is amazing for me. I kept believing. Nobody believed in me anymore. But I kept believing that if I keep working, it's going to happen one day. And this for me tastes like a victory, because, you know, this team Koratek trusted in me and we got invited to the Giro, and I can now finish here second on this mountaintop finish. And he kind of, not direct, but he kind of apologized a bit for what happened a few years ago. He said, you know, and I hope that all the people who have been angry with me and criticized me, that one day we can become good friends. So obviously it was really nice to see. And the guy was super, super happy. And, you know, not everybody is Remco Evenepoel or Tadej Pogacar. And, you know, they need some more time. And at the end of the day, you know, needing more time is also very, very relative, you know, because he's only 22, you know, normally that's when you're considered to be going to the pros, or back in the days, now everybody is looking when they're 18 or 19 and they don't have a chance, people give up. But there are other examples of guys who, you know, are a little bit slower to get to the top. And this guy is still only 22. The other guy, Davide Baez, is 26 and he just won his first pro race ever. So there's, you know, it's obviously a sport where people get to the top in different ways. And I really like to see that a young talent, you know, who kind of was giving up hope and people had not believed in him, kept going and can get there also, you know. That was nice to see.
And the resources they have at their disposal, from this level of team to what Remco has, right?
Yeah.
That's a big jump. Okay, let's talk about Stage 8, because a lot happened there, obviously. Let's first start with the stage winner, who has gotten a lot of TV time in this year, this season already. Ben Healy, who's a writer that just has grown on me immediately. Like, I really like this talent.
Well, I have to say, sorry, I take the lead on this, Spencer. I have to say, I raised my hand and I have to swallow my words. I don't remember in which episode, but it was probably on the pre-show of the Giro or after Liège Bastogne. I don't remember, but I did say, and I thought at that time, you know, that I had heard that Ben Healy would be going to the Giro, and I said, big mistake from the team to take him to the Giro. I have to swallow that and say, hey man, hats off to that performance. It was incredible.
I'm trying to reflect on why you said that. I think the context of it was he was getting some results early,
yeah.
And then it's like it was as if the team was just going to throw him at everything because exactly. They got a star, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, the guy is on form. I saw him win a stage in March in Coppi Bartali in a stage race in Italy. Then does these incredible performances in the classics, you know, in both Amstel and in Liège. Yeah, I mean, it looked like, you know, okay, this is a young guy who's in incredible shape. So, okay, let's take him to the Giro, you know?
Take him everywhere.
I have to say, JB and Spencer, you know, and I want to be completely straightforward with this. You know, EF, it's not the riders. The manager of EF is not my favorite person, right? So I can honestly say that I have my reasons for that. We're not going to go into detail because it would take a couple of podcasts.
Which we maybe will do over cocktails sometime.
Yeah. But hats off to that rider. Amazing talent. Then when you go look back, you know, and see, you know, he's not been on the radar of people, but you know, he won 2 years ago. He won a stage in the Baby Giro. He was on Trinity Racing, which is the same team as Tom Pidcock, was on the same team as this other big talent that's on Jumbo Visma, the other British guy, Thomas Glock. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Who's also a big talent. And you know, this guy is incredible. And to me, it seems like Ben Healy is one of those young riders who he has everything figured out, I think. You know, his position on the bike, it may look like it's not very stylish. It's not. But if you look at it really from a performance point of view, he is super aerodynamic. He has a position when he's on the hoods, on the brake levers. It's studied to be as fast as possible. And you know, I mean, and he knew when he was going with 50K to go, that was, in my opinion, the way I saw it, that was an acceleration with the intention, okay, I can maintain this and I'm going to the finish. And there was nobody in that breakaway who could even think about following him. All they could do is watch him right away. Impressive, really impressive performance. You know, not just the win, but the way he won, and you know, the peloton of the favorites did not take any time back. They only took a little bit of time in the final when Roglic attacked, a little bit, not much. So, I mean, amazing performance for Ben Healy.
Yeah. Before you give your thoughts on Ben Healy, Spencer, I did look if this is accurate what I'm looking at online. He only had a 2-year contract with EF, and this is year two. So he could be a really hot commodity for next year.
Agents fielding some calls for sure.
Right. But your thoughts.
Yeah, I was going to say, he went so fast when he attacked with 50K to go. Johan and I thought that he was confused because it was a circuit. We thought he thought that was the finish. Like, he was going unbelievably fast. Like, do you remember? Even just a few years ago, 50K solo breakaway, like that would seem, oh, that's just not even worth doing. Don't even try it. And he pulled out such a gap and he didn't slow down. It's just like, this race is over.
Yeah. And on such a hard circuit, Spencer, you know, he went on that first climb. So there was this short, because it put Evenepoel in trouble. You know, like 3 kilometers steep climb, Cappuccino, I think it's called. Yeah. Then there was a second category climb, which was about 8 kilometers. Then they had some flat, and then at the end he had that again. I mean, and he did not slow down. I mean, that's that last time he went over that climb again, he went still really fast.
Yeah, that's what was most impressive to me, that he just, it wasn't an attack and then I'm hanging on. It's just, I'm riding this fast. Yeah. Like, he must have been laughing to himself the 50K before they got there. Like, I am going to smoke these guys. My only concern is, who would ever work with him now? Like, can he ever get in another breakaway? Like, it was just a domination of a pretty strong breakaway group.
Well, obviously, you know, if he goes in breakaways, it's going to be mountain stages.
Yeah.
So already there, you know, it's normally a bunch of climbers. But yeah, I mean, listen, he got a great victory, not just because it's a stage in the Giro, but the way he won that stage, that's going to stick with people for a long time. You know, like, oh, that's that guy who did this amazing, crazy performance in the Giro. That's, I mean, yeah. Obviously what I said was, I was completely wrong. And it's, you know, once again, the proof that, you know, cycling has changed a lot, and I really don't know shit about this game anymore.
He just hadn't peaked yet. We thought he was like holding on to form. We didn't realize that he just wasn't even on form yet during the Spring Classics. He kind of reminds me of Julian Alaphilippe. Like, he could win hilly one day races. He could win stages. But I'm actually not sure I've ever seen Alaphilippe rip off the front of a Grand Tour stage like that with 50K left to go and then win the stage.
Well, they both, but I think Ben Healy even more than Alaphilippe, they both look a bit like D'Artagnan.
Yes.
You know who D'Artagnan is?
I think we say D'Artagnan or something.
Oh, D'Artagnan? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, they both look, you know, like the longer hair, the little beard.
All right, let's talk about the other things we saw on stage eight. We saw Roglic attack, and then now we know a lot more about Remco not being able to answer. I don't think we have to go too deep into that. But Geraint Thomas and Theo Gegenhardt right there. So your thoughts on the GC battle that we saw there?
Spencer, what do you think?
Roglic looks good. Like, back to, Brian Nygaard on the cycling podcast called it, he brought sexy back. He brought the old Roglic back. Like, his cadence was really impressive. Yeah. It looked like, oh, he's back. This is him. I was really impressed that Gegenhardt seemed not to even miss a beat. I thought Remco panicked a little. Like, he maybe went too deep, too quick. Gegenhardt didn't. He just kind of chugged right back up to him, caught him right at the top. That's exactly where you need to catch on a climb like that, because you don't want any gap on the descent, because it can be hard to catch back on. Thomas was a little bit slower. I'm curious to see how this plays out over the next 2 weeks. If Thomas, is he off the pace of a little bit of Gegenhardt, and how does that affect the team? But I mean, Geraint Thomas is a tough, tough, tough guy. Like, he was, what, two seconds off the back when they crested the top, and it's hard to nail someone back like that on the descent. And you could see Thomas just killing himself to get back on. Johan, question for you and for you, JB. Why didn't they work? Why were they a little hesitant to work with Roglic once they caught him? I didn't understand that.
Me neither. Me neither.
To, like, they should have been, we got to put time in Remco. Let's go.
Yeah, this guy has been crushing us. Yeah.
Well, for first of all, they were all on the limit, right? Especially, I mean, no, listen, at that point, they're all on the limit. But yeah, I mean, I think Geraint Thomas was definitely on the limit, because he was the slowest guy to and it took him a lot of effort to get back. So then you have like your heartbeat up here, and you have to, but they could have started to work together earlier. It would have, you know, maybe have been another 10 seconds, because it would have given Roglic some recovery. And so we'll see what, you know, anyway, we don't have to see now because Remco's out. But yeah, I mean, listen, Spencer, I mean, you know, I said from the beginning, right, that this was going to be a four-man race. It was going to be Remco and Roglic and Hagengaard and Thomas. Did I? I did, right?
I think we did.
No, we didn't. We said, hey, this is Remco versus Roglic.
No, we said
about anybody else.
Well, it could be a COVID case. Garrett Thomas impressed me at Tour of the Alps. I think I said the opposite of that. He looked terrible at the Tour of the Alps. I don't know what happened.
So, no, that's the proof that these guys, listen, we knew that Theo Gegenhardt was in good shape, but in my opinion, and I think most of the people and the followers of cycling say, okay, you know, it's Theo Gegenhardt. Yes, he won the Giro, but it's only the Tour of the Alps. The Giro is another game. And, but in my opinion, from what I've seen now, Theo Gegenhardt is in better shape than in the Tour of the Alps right now. Not just because he could get across to Roglic, but especially because of his time trial yesterday. I mean, that's the best time trial Theo Gegenhardt ever did in professional cycling.
Well, do you want to hear a crazy stat? So out of the four main contenders, Theo Gegenhardt, Primoz Roglic, Joao Almeida, Garrett Thomas, Theo Gegenhardt has beaten Thomas by 14 seconds in the combined time trials, Roglic by 18, Almeida by 22. So he's the best time trialist of these GC contenders remaining, and he's not even a time trial specialist, which tells you his form must be unbelievable.
Yeah.
So now they're all, and these are all within 5 seconds here. Garrett Thomas, I mean, Roglic is just 2 seconds behind that. Theo Gegenhardt is just 3 seconds behind Roglic.
Yeah, so crazy.
Obviously, we knew Roglic has been smelling blood all along, especially with that attack then, but how does this shake out, in your opinion, you guys, between Thomas and Gegenhardt?
Is
it still kind of a cool co-leadership kind of thing, or do they? What do you think?
I think they're good friends. I think they. I mean, to me, it seems at least that's what we see on social media, right? I kind of like the vibe that's going on within Team Ineos. It's they're joking, they're making fun, they have a special sense of humor, but I kind of like it. And I don't think there's going to be any issue at all between those two guys. They both will work for each other when they have to. And I think that's the strength against Roglic and Jumbo Visma. They have only that card to play. And it may be that that's how they can beat him. On the other hand, you know, the Giro, whatever we've seen until now, is nothing compared to the incredible long and steep mountains that we still have ahead of us. So, you know, there's certain stages where the climbs, it doesn't really matter if you have somebody with you or not. It's like, okay, whoever can go up this thing fastest is winning, because drafting is not such a big advantage. And, you know, now, the thing is, what's going to happen is Ineos, because normally if Geraint Thomas decides tomorrow to start in pink, he has the choice apparently, because he hasn't actually gotten it on the road. I personally think he should start in pink. But are they going to defend that jersey, or going to try to look for a situation to kind of get rid of the jersey but still stay ahead of Roglic? It changes a lot in the dynamics of you know, how much they have to work and how much they have to control. Now all of a sudden they are in the favorite role, and it's not anymore, you know, let's just get all our troops together and send people. It's clear that Gegenhardt and Thomas are the ones of the team who can match Roglic for the moment when it's uphill. And the others, with all due respect, you know, Arensman, Sivakov, Laurence Deplus, they are in amazing shape, but they're not as good as Roglic. So it's a bit of a risk also, right? So let's say, for example, there's a situation in one of the next stages and the group goes and Arensman is in there, who still, you know, is a great cyclist, and he seems to get into shape. I mean, a lot better shape than he was in Tour of the Alps. This is probably somebody who reacts to altitude a little bit later. But is that worth the risk of letting a breakaway go and get Arensman in that leader's position? And whoever is with that group, are they, is there not a risk that somebody may beat Arendsman further down the road? Right. So,
yeah.
Hang on. But before you give your thoughts, Spencer, on this whole how this is going to shake out, real quick here, let's check in with Lance. He'll have some messages and a couple offers. We always, almost always have discounted offers with our partners, and we'll be right back.
Our next partner has a product that I literally use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens, gosh, been a couple years now. I really wanted better gut health, more energy, and I kind of hated taking pills and vitamins. I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. So what is this stuff? 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day off just right, all for less than $3 a day. It's really about taking control of your health. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. Let's make it easy. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is head to athleticgreens.com/themove. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/themove. Let's talk about HVMN, right? We're talking about the company that has that has really perfected this idea of ketones and ketone esters. This has also become a part of our daily protocol, not just myself and George, but our friend JB Hager. He was laying around, thought he had, you know, COVID brain. HVMN and ketone IQ snapped him right out of it. We often hear that fasting and exercise are good for the brain. There's so many other ways to do it. By the way, the ketone IQ has the ability to cross the blood-brain barrier, which is pretty unique, and also used by the special forces, not just here in the United States, but around the world. And as well, as we talk about all the time, 60% of the reportedly and upwards of 60% of the Peloton is using the ketone IQ from HVMN. Head on over to HVMN.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE at checkout. That saves you 20%. Again, that's HVMN.com. And the promo code is THEMOVE. Let's talk about sleep. More specifically, let's talk about Helix Sleep. As you all know, so many of y'all listeners out there are pushing yourself hard, whether it's on the bike or on the running trail or in the pool or in the gym. And sleep is one. That's the best hack I've ever come up with. And fortunately, my entire life, I've been a good sleeper. But guess what? It's gotten a lot better because I only sleep on a Helix mattress. Here's a question for you. How long have you had your mattress? How has your sleep improved? Well, now we have an answer to it. With Helix, you go on their website, take a 2-minute sleep quiz, talk about your sleep, talk about the characteristics of what you like and what you don't like, what you'd like to improve, and voila, you have a totally custom mattress shipped directly to you. And by the way, don't forget the little ones. Helix Sleep has kids' mattresses specifically designed for children 3 to 12 years old. Check this out as well. Parents Magazine just named it the best mattress winner for their little ones out there. And also Wired Magazine and GQ Magazine named Helix Sleep one of the best mattresses on the market. Helix Sleep is offering up to 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/themove. Again, that's helixsleep.com/themove.
Okay, Spencer, now your thoughts on this, especially with Enneos.
Yeah, Johan brings up an interesting point here where they could have Tymon Arensman get into a breakaway. They call everybody's bluff. Like, well, we're not worried about it because we have 5 riders. They have 5 riders out of their 7 in the top 13 within 2.5 minutes of the race lead. And all of them are pretty good climbers. So it gives you a few cards to play if you want to be aggressive. Yeah, you could say, well, Arensman, we're fine with losing the jersey. Now he's the leader. But yeah. This is a problem they've had for like 5 years now, since Chris Froome had his crash. They have a wealth of options. This happened a little bit in 2019 at the Tour when Bernal and Thomas were both up there and they seemed like they were hesitant to pick a leader. You can have the race slip away. Like, what if Arensman's in pink. Arensman gets dropped and crushed on the stage 20 time trial. And now we've lost the race. Maybe we just should have picked one rider to back them like Jumbo is doing with Roglic. I just kind of wonder, are we going to see this again where they almost ride too conservatively to cluster riders towards the top and they aren't okay with just saying, Garrett Thomas, you're our leader. Teo Gegenhardt, you're our leader.
obviously, I think that would be too reactive because those guys, correct me if I'm wrong, should be co-leaders. I don't think Gegenhardt's going to be working for Thomas at any point. I don't think, unless he falls out of contention, I don't think if Thomas gets dropped, Gegenhardt is going to wait for him in the middle of a stage, a mountain stage. I think those guys are co-leaders. Gegenhardt's actually outperformed Thomas on the road. The only reason he's behind him is he lost 19 seconds in a sprint stage because he was held up by a crash. So Gegenhardt should be considered within the team is equal, if not even a more priority than Geraint Thomas, because he's actually won a Grand Tour more recently than Geraint Thomas has. But it remains to be seen. I mean, actually, I think it's a bit of a pain in the butt for them that Evenepoel left, because Quickstep would have controlled the race for the next week. That's actually a pretty tricky week. And now they have to burn all these guys in the front, and they have Crans Montana coming up on Friday, which is a really hard mountain stage. They might have preferred just to have been sitting back and letting Quickstep control this race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, now obviously Ineos is the team that everybody's going to be looking at. So it depends. I could foresee in the next few stages getting another pink jersey rider, so that Ineos can kind of sit back a little bit and doesn't have to do all the work.
Would that be? I'm just looking. We're getting to the point where that starts to get difficult. Like, I know, Einar Rubio or someone, like, give them 8 minutes and then I don't know. Like, I think it's going to be hard for a break to get to the line with enough time, especially with sprinters knowing that the chances or the opportunities are running out really fast. And if you look, I mean, everyone within, let's say, 3 minutes, I would be a little worried about getting leadership too. Maybe try to give it back to Leknussen, who's now about a minute back. Yeah.
Yeah. If I'm Leknussen, man, I am all over these breakaways.
Me too.
You know, easier said than done, of course, because the guy fought like a lion to maintain his lead on stage eight. And then even in the time trial, he went super, super hard. But yeah, if you look at all the other riders, it becomes a bit of it's not easy. Yeah.
Like, you don't want to spot Jay Vine anytime because that guy can time trial. So you get to the stage 20 time trial, you've given Vine too much time, you could find yourself in trouble really fast.
Yeah. I mean, that's a climbing stage, Spencer. Not different,
but he's a climber and a time trialist.
He is more of a climber than a time trialist.
Yeah.
Now that I look at the GC here, it's not going to be easy to give that jersey away. So, yeah, I mean, you may as well keep it then, right?
And they are strong enough. I mean, they would be nice if they had Ghana. I'm sure they wish he was still here and didn't have to leave the race with COVID. He would have been huge for them. You know, they have kind of been controlling the race. They're the strongest team in the race. You know, maybe they just take this in stride and it's not that big of a deal. And they figure, at least in their minds, we would have had it on Friday anyway, because Tego Gegenhardt's going to drop everybody and win that stage. Even if that maybe isn't exactly what would have happened.
Yeah. We'll go back to what you brought up earlier, Johan. You said when, pre-show, we were like, Evenepoel and Roglic were way up here, and then we'll see who gets third on the podium. There was a big gap. How much has your opinion changed on that when you look at these three riders?
No. I mean, right now, Geraint Thomas and Theo Gegenhardt, they are up there. They're level with, I mean, they're ahead of Roglic. So obviously it's because they're good, right? It's just a question of the other guy. I mean, Almeida's not far. Vlasov is, I mean, I think there's already a little bit of a gap, like Vlasov. But apparently I read an interview of Vlasov and he said that he prepared only for the Giro. Took it like he would come a little, I'm not going to say underperforming, but like taking it relatively easy and then try to be strong in the last week. So, I can't see it happening that Vlasov would beat everybody, but, let's not forget, Thomas and Gegenhardt, they are Grand Tour winners. Thomas, even the Tour de France, the Tour de France was second in the Tour, was third in the Tour. Gegenhardt won the Giro. I mean, they're up there with with Rock Rage. So, you know, if you look at it now in hindsight, it's kind of a bit logical, although, you know, we have not seen, I've personally, the one who has impressed me the most and surprised me the most is Geraint Thomas, because I think the way he's riding now, I don't think, I mean, he was third in the Tour de France last year. And in my opinion, he's better now than he was at that level last year in the Tour. So, I mean, it's difficult to compare the Giro and the Tour, of course, but he looks strong. He looks tough. Obviously has experience, most of everybody. You know, he's a diesel, so he's not going to crack. I think that, Thomas is probably going to be the biggest rival for Roglic.
You guys keep talking about the strength of Ineos and all this depth and how many of them are in the top 15 or whatever you said. What is your, after stage nine, what is your current evaluation of the strength of support for Roglic?
Mm-hmm.
You got Sepp Kuss out there trying to put his hands in the spokes.
Oh my God. That was hard to watch. Not a great endorsement of SRAM, by the way.
I've only seen one rider in person with gorilla arms like that adjust a derailleur. You've probably seen a lot of it, Johan. But anyhow, what is your grade of Jumbo for support for Roglic going forward?
You know, they don't have the same depth. But there was this one guy. I don't know now. Is in stage eight. I don't know if that was. It was one of those young riders, either the British guy, Thomas Gluck, or this other guy, Michael Hess, I think. The German guy, who is first-year professional, was on the development team last year. One of those two riders was impressive on stage eight, setting a tempo for Roglic. They have Sepp Kuss, they have Sam Omen, they have Koen Bouwman. I mean, they have a strong team in the case that Roglic would get the pink. As long as he's not in pink, it's fine for Roglic. You know, if he has one or two guys with him to keep him close whenever it matters to those other rivals, it's fine. It's only when you get in the lead that you really need a solid team and I think they're not as strong as the Ineos, but I think they're strong enough if, in the case Roglic would get in the lead, they could defend it.
Well, I think their strength is that they're so focused on one thing. I mean, as Johan said, it's not scrubs. Like, these are good riders. They don't have the depth of Ineos, but they have one goal. It's just a very simple plan every day when they wake up. To me, that is a massive advantage versus Ineos, which is, I know Gegenhardt and Thomas are friendly, but that almost even makes it more complicated where you're both trying to help each other. To me, that just gets messy really fast. Like, I like this single, everything's in one basket. Let's go. Let's win this fucking race. Like, we just have one thing to do. I think it's a huge advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, in the case of Ineos, you know, even if they have one, two, three, four, so they have five riders in the top 14, but it's only really about two riders, right? It's about Gegenhardt and Thomas. Sivakov and Arendsman and De Plus are going to have to forget about their personal ambitions and be at the service of those two. So, I don't dislike the situation of Ineos. You know, I mean, it's good. It's a good situation to have. To have these two guys up there, and you know, in case something happens, you have another one, right? It's a lot more simple with one leader, but at the same time, you know, look at Soudal Quickstep. You know, these seven guys now, they have to completely.
Yeah, that's the flip
side. Turn the switch, and try to get, you know, it's we only have 9 days. There's still 11 days, 12 days to go, 12 stages to go. So it's going to be tough for them. But I can see them get away with a stage win or two to that quick step.
But, well, it's going to, totally, because they've been closing a lot of stuff down. Like, McNulty's not been able to get into a breakaway because Quick Step marks him. Now they've switched sides. now they're the ones attacking. I think it's going to make the race a little bit more unpredictable. These breakaways might have more firepower than they did before.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we covered everything. Any other parting thoughts?
Just one question. So, Johan, you said earlier, you know, what we've seen these climbs are nothing to what we'll see later in the race. Are we potentially, like, Garrett Thomas is time trialing well. Are we potentially just misremembering how good Primoz Roglic is? Like, if you remember at Catalunya, anytime he got out of the saddle, he dropped everyone in that race, which a lot of them are GC contenders here at this Giro. Like, are we going to remember on Friday, oh yeah, this guy's really, really good?
I think so. I think Roglic is an amazing cyclist. I'm surprised to see that Thomas and Gegenhardt are so close to him. I mean, even better for the moment. But let's not forget, you know, there are hard stages coming, and Roglic is a killer. And he's a specialist then at taking those bonifications. You know, as you said before, you know, the Giro's never won with a big margin. The bonifications may be important. In this case, it's a huge advantage for Ineos also that Theo Gegenhardt is fast too. You know, so if Roglic doesn't drop Theo, then that's going to be interesting, those sprints for the bonifications.
That's true. I do. In this time, the time trial was crazy. Evenepoel wins. Thomas is a second back. Gegenhardt's 2 seconds back. Stefan Kung's 4 seconds back. Bruno Amiral,
yeah,
8 seconds back. Roglic, 17 seconds back. I've never seen margins that tight in a time trial of that length. In Roglic, to me, that's a little bit of not a fake result, because you get the result you got. That was the race. But he went out so slow, like unbelievably slow. From the first time check to the finish, he smoked.
He went second. He was second fastest. He was second fastest from point one to the finish, so the last 22 kilometers.
And the only one who beat him is Bruno, who had slightly better wind.
Amiral,
So he is flying right now.
So Roglic and Theo Gegenhardt and Geraint Thomas were more or less on par. So Roglic was 2 seconds faster than Gegenhardt in the second part, and he was 4 seconds faster than Thomas. That's basically the same. He was, however, 15 seconds faster than Evenepoel in that from point one to point to the finish. I definitely saw a different Roglic on a time trial bike than on day one. The cadence was completely different. I don't know if that was on purpose on day one, having a lower cadence because it finished on a climb. I don't know what the thinking would be behind that, but I think that time trial of Roglic was, you know, he didn't win, but when he heard that he was behind Evenepoel, he started going.
I can also see that Roglic wants to start time trials patiently, because we've seen him in the past just looking sideways, helmet on the side of his head, and slobbering at the end of a time trial.
While you are saying this, JB, I'm just thinking now. I'm just thinking. Hey, this Giro on the second last day finishes with a time trial, which is first flat and then with a climb.
Almost exactly the same.
When did that happen?
Yeah.
When did that? Anyway, Pogacar's not here, and there's nobody of that level here. But listen, I mean, it's a shame. It's a shame that Evenepoel is gone. But it's definitely going to be a very interesting Giro. And these guys are, we're talking about the three big guys, and they're all three Grand Tour winners. You know, it's going to be an interesting race.
Excellent. Okay. On that note, we'll wrap this up. I do want to take a second to mention to people, you can go to wedo.team and get a season pass. You can be part of our member meeting, which is all the pre-show and the fireworks from Johan. It's good stuff, I'm telling you. And you never know what's going to come out of Lance's mouth on some of these pre-shows too. So you get that with your season pass. You'll get a member tee when you sign up. You'll get discounts on all the merch. And also, if you can help us out with our efforts in Teleco Plains, Tennessee. After I left Chattanooga at Hincapie Fondo, I went up to Teleco Plains with Operation Get Out. And it's a very impoverished community. But I will tell you this, it's some of the most beautiful terrain I've ever seen in my life. You know, a lot of people live in poverty there because it used to be lumber and iron works. That was where what everybody did there. And those industries no longer exist there. But people come into this area, Teleco Plains, for the day with their bicycles, with their motorcycles, hiking, and they leave for the day because the community just doesn't have all the hotels and infrastructure and Airbnbs and bike shops and all that. But it could become a big cycling destination, in my opinion. So anyhow, if you can donate, we're already, when I was there, they had already built, I don't know, maybe 100 of the bicycles that these kids are going to get. $250 takes care of a kid getting on a bike for the first time, taking care of with a helmet. And the people, the boots on the ground there are great. They're going to get these kids out with some training, some rides, definitely getting them engaged in the sport. So again, if you can donate to that, we would sure appreciate it. You can go to wedo.team. And I'm actually a little more excited with what lies ahead on this Giro now that Remco's out of the picture. It sucks it went down this way, but it could get really interesting. And so we'll be checking in. Let's see, what's our next check-in here? Maybe Thursday? It's up to you guys.
Probably Thursday, yeah.
Thursday, okay. All right. So until then, thank you, Spencer. Thank you, Johan. And we will talk soon.